Welcome to Easel Talk, the podcast for EaselInsight.com, with your hosts, Phil Stark and Gabor Svagrik. This podcast is created for artists by artists. To follow along with today's discussion, remember to download the show notes at EaselInsight.com/blog. And now let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome to Easel Talk. My name is Gabor Svagrik.
And I'm Phil Stark.
And today we're going to answer some questions that came up from our Easel Insight private Facebook group, from our membership. Right. And I think these are definitely great questions and that we all struggle with, or struggle with at least. You're going to probably identify with some of them, some of these questions. And we're just going to kind of jump right in, and I think you'll find these useful. The first question, why don't you go ahead, Phil, with that first one?
Okay. First one is, someone wanted to know, why does oil paint, or why does the oil separate from the paint in the tube? And that's a good question, because I used to think that if I was at the art store, picked up a tube, opened the top, and oil kind of gushed out, I thought, well, it must be cheap paint. That's how I judged paint quality, but that's not so. This is a normal process. Oil does separate it a little bit. It's kind of like peanut butter. Sometimes better brand of peanut butter, their oil kind of separates, and you got to stir it up a little bit. But it doesn't hurt the paint. It's actually common, and it happens more often in larger tubes, from what I understand. And this is stuff I get from some different paint companies, what they've written about it. And it also happens when it gets hotter, when the paint tubes heat up a little bit. So, you know, if you store your paint in the garage in the summer, it's probably going to separate a bit more. But you can squeeze it out, and if it seems a little more tacky because the oil has separated too much, you can add just a few drops of linseed oil,
yeah,
or poppy seed oil, whatever they, I think linseed commonly would, yeah, work.
Yeah, I use that 150 milliliter, the Utrecht paint,
yes,
and I do see it in there. It's frustrating. It does happen. For the most part, it's more in the beginning of the tube, and it's okay once I start squeezing out more. It has happened where it just kept on doing it. It was really bad. I just took it back to the store. So take it back to the store, return it, and say, I need another one because the oil is separated from the paint too much. So then return it, and most art supply places will you know, not just refund you. You just want another tube.
Right.
So
right. And if it's really bad, that probably shows it's a really, really old tube because it does happen with age.
Yeah, so don't try to fight it if it's that bad in the tube.
Yeah, and if you live in Tucson, like we do, don't store your paint in the garage.
Yes, yeah,
it'll really separate there
in the summer. Yeah,
at 150 degrees in my garage.
Yeah, so that's what you can. So don't worry about too much. But if it's a problem, just return it.
Yeah,
and they'll give you a new one. Another question about painting over old paint. Old painting. Can I paint over an old painting? And the question is, yes, you can. Make sure it's not varnished.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that whatever, if you're painting over it, that it's going to bind to the other layer underneath it. Which is pretty toxic. It's a remover. It removes varnish. I'm spacing out right now. I've done it to remove varnish.
Oh, turpentine.
Pure gum turpentine. Yeah, it's really, you got to make sure you do it outside. It's really nasty. But if it's not varnished, then you can just prime over it too. Painting straight over a painting, obviously you need a sort of a quote unquote clear surface to go from, so you need to prime it. And the question is about, you know, can I use acrylic primer and then paint oil over it? Well, they sell acrylic gessos, and you can paint oil paint over it. I don't see a problem with...
Yeah. For me as a study, you can.
Yeah, it depends. Exactly. Yeah. So let's take it back a notch. What is your purpose?
Right. Yeah, if you're low on funds and you need more surface to paint on, yeah, you could use acrylic gesso. You know, the idea is you can paint oil over gesso, but putting gesso on top of oil doesn't adhere as well, doesn't stick as well. But again, for just practice. But even then, for me, the older paint underneath kind of the brush strokes kind of disrupt the brush strokes I'm putting on top. It can be a little, especially smaller. If it's a bigger one, maybe not as much.
Yeah, exactly. But so actually what I said there, that you might want to check into that, Phil, could be probably more correct as far as putting acrylic over oil paint versus just when you have you put acrylic over generally a piece of wood or a canvas that's got rabbit skin glue underneath it versus putting it on there. But I wouldn't personally paint over old paintings. One of the big reasons is that the texture issue too.
Yeah.
It's not going to be absorbing. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to act the same way. Your paint is not going to act the same way as it would if you were starting from.
Yeah, it absorbs differently.
Yeah.
And the texture underneath can be kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
But if you are going to and you want to prime over it, like you've mentioned before, the Gamblin oil primer. And I think most paint companies make an oil primer so that you put oil on top of it. And
I know some artists that do that, but try the oil. The oil primer definitely has more of a natural feel to it when you paint over it versus the acrylic.
Yeah.
Use the oil primer, not the acrylic primer.
Yeah.
Over it.
Yeah, I'd just soon start on fresh, even for studies. It's just, things just flow better. Now, I have painted over old paintings, and I kind of like the abstract quality of just painting directly on the painting after putting a little medium on there to make it stick better.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I'd rather start with a cleaner canvas. And if you decide you want to sand down that texture as you can paint over, be really careful, because that puts all those pigment in the air that you can breathe, and that can cause a real problem. So I definitely wear a mask before you sand it down.
Yeah. Next question was, should I use a cadmium substitute? That question could be, for yourself, is it a health issue? Is it a money issue? Is it a... You know, you have to ask yourself, why are you in need of needing a cadmium substitute? It is a toxic material. If you stick it on your tongue and eat it, it is more expensive for sure. Cadmium colors are more expensive, but the upside is that they have excellent covering power, and it's kind of a, sometimes hard to substitute the cadmium colors, even though some of the hues is what you should be maybe probably looking at, or there's some other things. Maybe Phil, you want to jump in this one that you can substitute the cadmium with?
I use a cadmium orange hue instead of a true cadmium, because I don't need my oranges all that strong. And the cadmium orange hue, of course, isn't cadmium at all. I don't know why they even bother.
Oh, they're calling it cadmium hue, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Cadmium orange hue, and it's a yellow iron oxide and some other orange mixed together. And it works pretty well. It's not as strong, and I probably use twice as much of it as I would if I bought the true cadmium. But what I can substitute, and cad red is the same way. It's a cad red hue, is a naphthol red most of the time. But not as strong, doesn't cover as well, but it still works. You know, it's still a pretty good color. But I cannot substitute the cad yellow. I use cad yellow light, because that's where I mix my greens. I think you do too, the ultramarine blue and the cad yellow light, to mix most of the greens. You can adjusted then with reds or violets or something, but because it makes a more natural green. And if I use a cad yellow light hue with the ultramarine blue to mix my greens, it gets real weak. It's very very poor quality green, so I will not use a cad yellow light hue, but I will use the orange hue, and once in a while I'll substitute the cad red with a cad red hue.
Yeah, it gets a little technical, but I mean, it's a, again, sometimes a trial and error kind of thing too, what you're looking for. You know, color is such a these fickle things, and that's why in our, you know, in our Easel Insight training videos, but in general, just when we teach too, is color is the last thing that we discuss, because what we see for the most part is that people have a problem with, in this order, what I'm saying is drawing, design, value, and then color to last. And, right. And we see folks wanting to jump to brushwork and color and all the, we call it the fun stuff, before laying down a good foundation. And you gotta have that down first. So when we discuss color, you know, take this with a grain of salt, because we, you know, Phil and I see color differently, and you will see color differently.
Yeah, yeah, everybody and, sees it differently.
Yeah, so yeah, that's always a. That's why I don't know. I just haven't found a good. A good book for just for like painters on color, like, because it's too technical. You go into the technical aspects of it, and again, you just fall asleep on the second page, like, oh my gosh. Because if you don't put it into context for painters, we're right. visual, we need to see what the heck do you mean by that? Why does it, you know? So,
yeah, it's like nailing jello to the wall, about color,
The next one is about the question was, should I use a retouch varnish to paint into a dry painting? I've used retouch varnish, and it's very difficult to go into a dry painting and try to nail the color and the value, because there's a very high chance that you're not going to do it well, and it's going to stick out like a sore thumb where you touched it up. So the retouch varnish is good, but it's extremely toxic. It smells. Yeah. It should be applied outside, and there are other options. And Phil, you want to jump on the other options?
The retouch has some solvents in there that aren't, you know, I know everything used to be made with just pure gum turpentine, because that's the only thing that dissolved Damar varnish, which is what retouch is. It's mostly solvent with a little bit of varnish. So if you can not use that, and again, Gamblin has a good line of non-toxic solvents and mediums, and of course their solvent, Gamsol, is non-toxic. It's very safe to use. And that with a little bit of oil medium, maybe linseed oil, half and half, or you can thin it more if you want your medium a little thinner, and brush it on the painting that you're going to go back into and finish, and let it sit for a few minutes, let the oil soak in, and then kind of wipe it off, because you don't want it standing on the surface of the paint. It gets too much medium on there. But that's a good substitute, and again, you're getting rid of the real harsh solvents on there. And there's some other mediums too. I'll use any oil medium, thin it a little bit with Gamsol, and just I use a rag and just rub it on.
Yeah,
and it brings back the colors, the original value of the colors that they had when they were wet, because as colors dry, they tend to go flat, darks get lighter, the lights get duller, so you need something on there to bring back the value and create kind of a surface where the new paint will stick better to the older paint.
And that's why, you know, sometimes most paintings are done in the time where the oil paint kind of dries. At least bulk of it is done in that time, which is I mean, we can break it down into a two, three-day period or something like that, because then after that it starts setting up.
Right.
So,
and one thing I found about the retouch is it never dried. It got really tacky, but just because I would, you know, if I didn't have time to varnish something, I'd put retouch on it,
Oh yeah,
and, never, and yeah. it just never
you get a varnish. Dry. Yeah, you have to varnish a final varnish at the end because otherwise it's gonna be you're gonna have cat hair stuck to it.
That's right. But that stuff it just gets tacky and it just.
So there's some paintings out there, Phil, that are on the wall that.
And they're probably still tacky. 25 years later.
Still tacky. It's funny. There's a question. This was in the group too, and the question is about temperature. And bending it, and warm or cool, light, warm or cool shadows, and she says in outdoors and in studio light, it's not really frustrating, but would like to hit this note correctly and with confidence on the first brushstroke, rather than after a few corrections and sneaking in the back door. So the question is, you know, getting it right in the first go. And I mean, that's wishful thinking. We wish even an experienced painter is not going to be nailing it all the time. We get better as time goes by, but it's a trial and error. So be concerned more about when you look at something, you know, you basically squint down, look at the overall value in color, put it in a color family. Is it a cool, warm? Is it sort of a warm, cool or cool warm, I mean, whichever you think it is, you'll be okay with that, and then figure out the value, which is more important, and then you can bend the color a little bit. Once you have the correct value down, you can bend the color. You can go back and remix the same exact value, but just slightly warmer, red or yellow, whatever you want. Once you have the value down, I think that's a better way of looking at it.
Yeah. And sometimes we try and be too subtle right off the bat. We want those real subtleties in color and temperature. But I find it easier during the block and the beginning of the painting, knock it in fairly definite. In other words, if it's in the shadow, it's dark and cool. If it's in the light area, it's going to be very light, very warm. Then I can go back into it and adjust. And that's... I have very few paintings where I put down a brush stroke and leave it. I'm always going back and adjusting. I'm sure there are people who put it down right the first time. But painting to me is just a series of adjustments. And I think the more you learn, the more you can see those things that need adjusting. That's what's frustrating at early on is you don't know what needs to be adjusted. They can get real frustrating, but...
There's another question about using bold colors and painting loosely, meaning how could I be more bold with my color and paint? It was a two-pronged question, but the bold colors, again, we hear the questions about color, and until I look at that person's work, then I can answer the question better. Because if that person's design, drawing, and values are not there, there's no amount of color that will save it.
Right.
So I would say don't worry about color. Worry about, again, drawing, design, and value first. And but if you have those things down and you struggle with color, you'll still be okay. But if it's the opposite, if you're a great colorist but you struggle with the other ones, there's a good chance those paintings are not going to be something that's going to stand up on its own. So
yeah, good color can't save a bad composition.
Yeah,
but a good composition can save bad color.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. But I know what she's saying though. Yeah. You know, you want to be able to. And I think that strong color is kind of relative. If you think in terms of everything I mix. Be slightly muted. So I block in a painting where everything has a little bit of the complement in it. So everything is slightly muted. Then I can go back and decide where I want some unmuted color, that strong, bold color. But if everything is bold, if everything is bright and bold, then everything's screaming at you and nothing makes a color statement. So I would say go muted first and then decide the focal point. Get a little stronger or a certain area, you can pull out some stronger colors to draw some attention.
Yeah.
But if you've seen some of the paintings, where everything is just almost pure color. It just all screams at you, and
yeah,
there's no statement made there at all.
Well, it's like me yelling at you all the time. I mean, it's the same concept. Or you listen to music that's just out of key all the time.
Yeah,
that's what that is. And when you say that to people like that, they're like, oh, okay, wait, I understand. So you got to put it in sometimes in different terms for them to understand how does that translate to other things in life.
Yeah, the music analogy is a good one.
And lastly, the question about brushwork. This comes up in our, not just in the group, but of course we get emails about this. My question to you, if this is the question you would be asking us, is your design, drawing, and value, you're good? You're good with that. You kind of not mastered it, but you really have a good foundation. And let's say, okay, fine, let's move into color, but we can even leave color out. If the question is yes, then okay, cool. We can look at it and answer that question. But if it's not, there's no reason for you to jump to that. That's a byproduct. That's what we call it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Once you can learn to simplify the shapes, read values real well, then good brushwork is an outcropping of that, of understanding simplification. But I do understand the frustration. Even as you're struggling with composition and values, you want to be able to apply the paint in such a way. And I would say early on, the best way is just to paint thicker as opposed to painting too thin, because you're going to get...
Yeah, you can't have brushwork, exactly.
Yeah.
You can't have brushwork without using paint.
Right.
And
the tendency is to get thinner because you're unsure. But just make a definite decision, use thick paint, and put it down.
Yeah.
Brushwork will improve.
Yeah, and you gotta don't be cheap with yourself with paints, because it's ultimately your work is gonna suffer.
Yeah.
And some of this brushwork question comes from paintings you've seen of other artists physically, not on the internet, but physically you've seen it in museums or could have been a gallery, and say, I want that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, great, but the reason that artists can get that is because they had those other fundamental things that I discussed before.
Right.
So, Phil and I teach the fundamentals. That's what Easel Insight is about. We do take things on somewhat individual basis too, of course, when we see the painting inside the group. But brushwork is really the least of the issues that most painters struggle with. It's generally the I call it almost the big three. Is again, design, drawing, and value. That's a big three.
Right.
And color is in there. It's important. We need color, but those big three, you gotta have that down first before we can discuss brushwork.
Yeah, brushwork makes more sense when you get a good understanding of drawing, value, and composition.
Yeah.
Kind of like Gabor said, it's more of a byproduct of those three than something you can study separately.
Yeah. So, yeah, we can, there's other fun questions out there. We'll do, more of this frequently. We ask questions. And when you download the show notes, you can, email us too. If you have any, if you're not part of EI, you can always send some questions in too, and we'll put it into the hopper.
And these are questions we get on the Easel Insight private Facebook group, where there's a lot of interaction and people asking each other questions, and Gabor and I jump in there as well. And
yeah, it's just a treasure trove.
It's great for
knowledge.
Great place to learn.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us today, and we will see you next time.
Bye bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of Easel Talk, the podcast that takes your art to the next level. Subscribe to and review our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out our website, easelinsight.com, for more episodes and information. See you next time on Easel Talk.